All right, good morning. I want to begin a new, I guess, series of classes on different topics that are motion rights, but specifically relating to basar v'chalav, milk and meat. They're rather, you know, it's a rather large section of halacha that for modern Orthodox Jews is a rather significant aspect to how we keep halacha. So I think we're going to have a number of different tshuvos to do. So I want to just like go through some of these as a theme, and we'll kind of go through some of the tshuvos that Moshe writes about. The first one, it's not exactly the most remarkable or memorable tshuva, but it's a rather interesting one, because it's like one of these side details I think most people don't fully realize, or you know a little bit about, but you don't fully know everything about, and it has to do with bread that's eaten on a table, whether it's milchik or fleishik. So take a look, for instance, at the Shulchan Aruch. This is the very beginning of that sheet. Shulchan Aruch says as follows: Mi she'achal gvina v'rotel lechol basar, tarich liva'er me'al shulchan shiri pat she'achlum gvina. So let's say, for instance, let's say the classic example of this, let's say on Shavuos night, you begin your meal, your meal is to eat milchik. You start your meal, I guess, with cheesecake or something. And then later on, you decide to have some meat. So what do you have to do? So not only do you have to change the tablecloth, you also need to get rid of all of the leftover pieces of bread. You can't eat any, you know, obviously cheese left on the tablecloth. So Rav Moshe is dealing with this question. It's a rather small question, not a big potatoes question, but it's it's an interesting side issue. So Rav Moshe writes the Tshuva in 1957, and he says as follows. ובדבר מי שאכל גבינה ורוצה לאכול בשר שאיתה בירדי אסימון פיטט שצריך לבאר שיעורי הפת שאכלו עם גבינה שהקשה ידידי שמשמע צריך לייחד פת למאכלי בשר לבד ומאכלי חלב לבד. So the following, the guy who asked him this question, I guess this Rav Aaron Jacobich, asked him the question that it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch that you might need to have special bread for fleishik meals and special bread for milchik meals.
You mean just in general?
Yeah, so this is
totally separate.
So this is something different. There's a different halacha. This is not what he's talking about. There's a different halacha that says that bread generally cannot be milchik or fleishik. Why not? Because typically you won't necessarily identify it, so you can't have like bread that's made with milk or with, you know,
like
theory.
Like that, an English muffin, because it looks different.
So there are two exceptions to when you're allowed to do something. Either if it's everyone in town knows about this being a dairy or milk product, or fleishik product, or if it's like very clearly distinguishable, and then everyone knows.
But I thought you're not supposed to use dairy bread.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying. So you're not supposed, in theory, you're not supposed to really have dairy bread. You're not supposed to have it. So that's not what we're talking about here, but it is a separate discussion. Here, what we're talking about is this individual read the Shulchan Aruch, and he understood, because the Shulchan Aruch just says that you're not allowed to have, you have to get rid of the leftover bread, that it sounds like, well, if you're getting leftover bread, it sounds like, you know, if I cut my challah, so, you know, maybe, I don't know how much, depending on how big your challah is, maybe you ate, you know, a quarter of it, half the challah, sounds like you have to put the rest of the challah away, and I ate, you know, it's a fleishik meal yesterday, so it's fleishik now, and I need to have a separate, you know, bread for milchik meals. So it sounds like I need to...
It's actually a parv.
The bread itself is parv, like it's, you know, fully parv. But it sounds like that I might need to have, you know, special bread for my milchik meals and my special bread for my fleishik meals, despite the fact that the bread itself is parv.
I have a practical question for that. So usually Friday night I just cut a half a challah roll, usually with a fleishik knife. I know that if you cut an onion with a fleishik knife, that becomes fleishik. But is the half of the challah fleishik?
Okay, so that's exactly this question.
Oh.
Okay, that's exactly the question. So it sounds like, as far as asking the question, it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch that maybe you would have to be concerned that it's fleishik. So the motion says as follows. Hinei ha'isur hurak al shiyure chaticha tapat she'achlu bagvina, o af al chaticha katana she'chatach kedei lechol ima gvina she'alzu eni mitar. Rav Moshe says what the prohibition here refers to is not to large, you know, piece of the bread or, you know, leftover like a half a loaf. That's not what we're talking about. The prohibition that we're referring to here is like the morsels of bread that are already cut, right? Imagine, you know, your Shabbos meal, you're cutting challah, and maybe you have some guests, so you cut like a number of pieces. And maybe you have it like in a small bread basket or something left over on the table. So Rav Moshe is saying those pieces of bread that are already cut out, or the crumbs, or, you know, the morsels of bread that are on the table, those are now considered to be, if you have a fleishik meal, considered to be fleishik. Why? Because even though, yes, it's true that I didn't necessarily eat them or they had no contact with meat, there's also a strong possibility that maybe they did come in contact with meat.
You had gravy on your hand,
right,
touched the piece.
Exactly.
Touched the other piece.
Yeah, maybe I just didn't notice. Maybe it fell in. Maybe it touched something. And you don't really pay attention. It's not something, not that there's intentional, you know, mixing it together, but you just don't pay attention so much to, like, what happens to individual slices of bread that are already cut during a meal.
That means you can't make French toast out of them Sunday morning.
Well, that's a leftover. Yeah, that would be a problem. Yeah, it sounds like it would be a problem for leftovers. Yeah. V'lachein afim yomar shelo nagaba hagvina hu kimotet lo ram yaleh. So Rav Moshe says, even if someone says, like, I'm certain I did not touch this piece of bread with, like, fleishik or, you know, milchik hands or whatever, so the answer is, like, we're not sure we can trust you. Not because, like, we think you might mind, but it's more just, people just don't realize, like, their hands, it's the same type of explanation for why we have to wash our hands in general before davening, before eating bread, because our hands are busy and you don't really notice, you know, how often what you're doing with your hands. I think during COVID, or, you know, they're talking about different health things, and they said the fact that the average person touches their face, I think, close to like 1,000 times a day or something, whatever it was, like 100 times a day, and people don't even realize, like, you don't notice how often, like, you touch your face, your eyes, your nose, and it's, you know, it's astounding how often we do that without even noticing what we do with our hands. So the same thing's true with, like, the bread. We don't suddenly notice where we put our bread. So it'd be a problem. Aval, hapata gedola shiomedet bein ma'achel echalav bein ma'achel basar nizharin bazeh bein ma'chushem anagaba gvina o abasar. However, what Moshe says is that when it comes to the leftover loaf, right, not the cut pieces, the slices, but the loaf itself, right, you have, you know, half the challah is still left over, that we don't have to be concerned about. Why not? Because the odds that you touch that with, like, meat or milk are very, very slim. Because you don't, you know, nobody just, like, grabs a big loaf and just eats it, you know, directly. So the chances are very slim. Like, maybe you'd cut off yourself a slice. But at that point, you know, you're paying attention to where your hands are, they're dirty or not. Like, you'd pay attention more. So we're not as concerned about the loaf. But in terms of the slices that are already pre-cut, that would be a problem, and you'd have to have separate bread. Rav Moshe doesn't mention this, but in terms of, like, the French toast question, I would say, if you're careful to remove the leftover bread, right, before you bring out the milchik or dairy, you know, things, then it'd be fine. Like, let's say, for instance, that you start your meal with bread, maybe even start with, like, you know, some people have, like, dips for their first dish. You know, they have, like, hummus or whatever, they have egg salad. So, like, if you have the bread out then, and then before you bring out your next course, let's say chicken and meat, whatever it is, before you bring out your next course, you then put away the bread, right, even the slices. So then, even Rav Moshe should agree, that's fine. Like, at that point, you could still reuse the slices for French toast the next morning.
What do you do? What I do, I have a challah board. I make a motzi, I cut the challah, I pass it around. I'm eating a fleishik meal. The board stays on the table with the challah in case anybody wants more, because I may cut some later. And I suppose that I may have had fleishiks on my hands, so maybe I can't use that for French toast, even though it's the half a loaf?
So I think the half a loaf, Moshe is saying you wouldn't have to worry about it.
Okay, as long as, even if I'm eating fleishiks, and even if I might cut a piece
dirty. Yeah, I mean, especially nowadays, I think people with their hands, I mean, this halacha was written also, people didn't use, yeah, people nowadays, people use utensils.
Right.
So it's like, the chances that you have, like, meat gravy on your hands are much slimmer than, you know, back in the day. That's first off. And I think people, yeah, I think before, I mean, I hope most people, if, you know, they have guests or even for themselves, before you would cut like a big piece of bread, like, you would check, oh, my hands are, like, a little bit gravy, like, let me wash them off first before I place them directly on the bread.
But utensils relates to my question about the fleishik knife.
Yeah, so the fleishik knife, let's get back, I'll get to that in a second. Let me get there. He's actually going to talk about it, but I'll talk about it in a second. So then Rav Moshe adds the following thing, which is an interesting side point. which is the following, and I'll comment on this in a second. So he says the following. So the source for all of this is from a Gemara Yerushalmi that says as follows: Shu Mekorjin Zeh Legir Sefer Tur. The Tur quotes it that the Ita the Amar Biyosi Hadin De Achal Chubit Vidase Michal Kupid Sarich Mevar Ptitin. So the Gemara quotes the story where Biyosi says one who wants to who's been eating some type of dairy food, some chubit, which is like some dairy dip, and he wants to eat some meat dip, some meat food, he has to get rid of the leftover bread. So the question here becomes, what exact word does it say in the, our Girsan of Yerushalmi about what he has to get rid of? Does it say get rid of ptitin, which means crumbs or leftover pieces, or does it say get rid of pisat, which means get rid of a loaf? So in our version of the Yerushalmi, it actually says pisat, actually says loaf. That's the way we actually have it nowadays, which would seem to imply that, you know, even a full loaf of bread would be problematic. Rav Moshe says it's clear that the Rishonim, you look at the Torah, the Beit Yosef, their version clearly did not have the word loaf. It had, you know, crumbs. So it's a very different concern. Rav Moshe then says, however, Ach mishi rotze lechmir, shelo lechol kol apachi al shulchan shel machal gvina in basar o lehepach, af she'en bachar shaflizdina, yesh bazeh mal rachaka yetera, vezeu kavana tago, goes a shri, shekatav mitzvah min mufchar, hechad achol gvina rotze lechol basar, serich labim lashulchan alechem, kol macha shalu im gvina al shulchan, ayim sham asmato, af lepasta gdola. So he does say the following. If you want to be machmir, you want to be extra stringent. So then, you know, there is room to be stringent. If you want to be, you know, you had your fleshik, you know, challah on the table, even though it's a full loaf, you know, or half a loaf left over. If you want to say, now this is fleshik, I'm going to treat it as fleshik, then there is, you know, there's logic to it. It's not an illogical thing. And you're welcome to be machmir. You don't, emotions and maybe clearly you do not have to do it. It's not the requirement, but it's mitzvah min hamufchar. It's, you know, it's, if you want to be machmir, this is something you can do. So it just, I'll point out, just to mention logically, your motion here is kind of accommodating that, you know, sometimes we have so much of the impression that, you know, people ask questions, they're always looking for the kulas, which is sometimes true. But it's also true that sometimes people really are looking for chumras. Like, you know, sometimes you don't realize it, but people really...
nowadays than ever before, perhaps.
Yeah, it's true. Sometimes people really come in and ask the question assuming that I want to be machmir. And so part of the responsibility of a posek is often to say, not only of, like, when you can be mako, but also of, you know, what are the types of things that if you want to be machmir are worth being machmir for. So Rav Moshe here is saying, be very clear, you do not need to be machmir for this. And you should realize this is not a chumrah that you need to take on. If you want to take it on, so then I, you know, I give you my blessing. By all means, go ahead. This is not, you know, a crazy chumrah. You can do it, but you don't have to go through this chumrah. It's just a chumrah. You can indeed, you know, eat the rest of the bread with, you know, milchik or whatever later. You don't have to treat it all as fleshik. So that's with regard to the piece of the bread, Rav Moshe says. And it's, you know, Rav Moshe in this tshuva, he's not, I don't think Rav Moshe is being particularly creative. I don't know of anyone who disagrees with Rav Moshe on this issue. I mean, maybe there's like one posek out there, but I think for the most part, everyone seems to agree with Rav Moshe. But it's worth noting that Rav Moshe's, you know, sometimes Rav Moshe's tshuvas are not always about the most novel or, you know, mechudash topics. Sometimes what makes a posek, you know, significant posek is the fact that they have both the mundane questions as well as the, you know, significant questions. That they have, you know, 5,000 questions on, like, chickens kashers before they deal with something like mechitzas or, you know, something that's a little bit more controversial. So,
highly relevant to everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is very relevant. It's, you know, it's just like a smaller topic, not as, certainly not as exciting. It's not a, you know, I wouldn't teach this in a class on Shavuot night at 3 a.m. But, you know. but it's, you know, it's worth putting out that Rav Moshe has a tshuva, you know, it's like a short little cute topic, just to be aware of. In terms of your question, he doesn't address this question of the knife. If your knife has, if you're concerned that your knife might have food on the knife, like it has like leftover shamnunit, which is like, you know, oils or food, so then you have to get rid of what's called kedinatila. You actually have to get rid of some of the any place where the knife would have made contact with the bread, you actually have to get rid of and treat that as fleshek. In practice, that's what you have to do. I'm just trying to make that pretty clear. You actually can see it.
I was asking about a totally clean knife.
Yeah, I think she say it. I'm trying to see if it. Yeah, actually, take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. Go back to the first source. The Shulchan Aruch actually says this. He says as follows. V'chein kol shekein she'asur lachtoch gvina. That's kind of middle. He says that you're not allowed to cut cheese. Afilu sonenet b'sakin shragin lachtoch basar. Any knife that you're typically use for fleshek, right? Use like a steak knife. You're not allowed to use it to cut cheese. Why? Because, you know, there's concerns about the leftovers and the pieces and stuff like that. V'lo oh, not only that, afilu hapat shachlim gvina. Even bread, which is often used with cheese. Let's say, for instance, your bagel, which you typically eat with cream cheese. So even that, you shouldn't be using it to cut with a knife, which is usually used with fleshek, because we're worried that maybe there is some leftover food left over on the knife. There's reverse obstacle, you can't use, you know, milk knife or fleshek spread. Miur, my quote, alidei ne'itza b'karka kasheh shari. You are, though, allowed to do it. This is based on the practice I'm showing him, quote, if you first stick your knife into, like, hard ground, which is another way of, like, cleaning it, effectively. Yeah. So then you would be allowed to use it not to cut cheese, but to cut, allowed to cut bread, you know, with that knife. However, Rama'at, Aval Kvar Nagu Kol Yisrael, Liot Lab Shnei Sakinim, Lirshom Echadim Shelo Nikar, V'Nagu Lirshom Shel Chalab, and Lirshom Minhag Shel Yisrael. The Rama'at, though, at the end of the day, while that's true, you definitely could clean the knife, and this is how you would clean it back in the day, then you would be fine in terms of cutting bread with it, but the Minhag has clearly developed, and nowadays, Jews have two knives, or at least two sets of knives, one fleshek and one milchek, and Rama adds that at least one of them is noted or is, you know, is distinct enough to recognize it. And the minhag, at least back then, was that the distinct utensil was the milchek ones, like the standard utensils were fleshek. The distinct ones that had the stickers or whatever, you know, was distinct about them were milchek. I think nowadays it's a little bit less prominent. I think every kind of family does their own, you know, their own thing. I don't think it's so common to have the milchek ones specifically be the different ones. But certainly I think it is pretty common nowadays to have at least two knives. I think now it's actually pretty common to even have three knives. Most often people have, like, a special knife that's used for bread, which is parv. So typically that's actually, you know, especially I'd recommend it because it's really not a big expense to have a separate knife. But in practice, if you do use a knife to cut a piece of bread, what's the halacha? So if you're really concerned that the knife might have, assuming everything's cold, it's just regular bread, and the bread, let's say, is not like garlic bread or like full of onions or something of the like, it's just regular bread, and you're cutting it with your knife, so if you're concerned that the knife might have had cheese residue or meat residue on it, then you'd have to get rid of like a small amount of bread that made contact with the knife slice. So like, you know, like maybe like a centimeter or half an inch, you know, on each side of the bread, like that would have to get rid of that, and then the rest of the bread would be fine. If, though, nowadays, for the most part, I hope, our knives typically are hopefully clean.
Well, we have both hot water.
We have dishwashers, we have, we have soap, which they didn't really have quality soap back then. And not only that, but we have also sponges, right? One of the hard problems one of the difficulties for them back then about cleaning knives wasn't just they didn't have, like, running water or hot water or soap, which is itself all significant in washing, but specifically with knives are, you know, sharp. And how much are you really going to rub a knife when it's very sharp? Well, nowadays we have sponges, so I don't need to rub it directly on. It's also true that the knife material is usually, you know, for the most part, usually stainless steel, which is usually a lot easier to clean than I don't know, whatever they had, aluminum or copper or bronze or iron. I'd use that back then, which are, you know, a lot more, there's a lot more residue that stays on those type of materials. So for the most part, if you can assume that your knife was clean, then I think you probably are fine to even treat the whole thing still as parv, especially if the knife has not been used to cut anything hot in the last 24 hours, which is probably true for the most part. If you're really concerned, so then, you know, cut off a little bit of the closer part of the knife, and you definitely can be machmer that way, and you're fine. But I think if you have, like, a reasonable assumption that the knife was clean and hadn't been used in the last 24 hours with something hot, then you're almost definitely fine. You probably don't need to be too concerned.
So I want to say I have different color knives from the Olympic inflation. And right now I have green-handled knives for Plasik because the Parva knives never worked for me. It always got mixed up with the Plasik. So the conclusion is if I use a clean Plasik knife to cut a challah roll and put away the half right away, that half can be considered okay for millipix.
Yeah, not only that, but according to Moshe, even if you don't put them half right away, you can even leave it on the table. As long as, you know, as long as, say, kids are not coming with their, like, grubby hands and, like, grabbing onto the piece of meat, on piece of the loaf, you're fine. I mean, adults probably wouldn't do it nowadays. Like, I think kids might, so you have to be worried about kids, but,
yeah.
You know, like, my son might take, like, well, I mean, he's still pretty young, but let's say a two-year-old might, you know, put his hand on a whole loaf of bread and then eat, like, a tiny corner. That's pretty common, but I think most adults wouldn't really do that, hopefully.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you're more just saying it can be machmir, but you don't have to if you don't want to. An extra loaf of bread is fine. You can treat it as parv and use it for French toast or whatever you'd like, you know, as leftovers or lava malka. All right, that's topic number one. Any questions or comments about bread? Okay. Second topic, let's talk about. This is a very different topic. These are nothing to do with each other. Just they all have to do with the umbrella topic of, you know, milk and meat. Rav Moshe was asked the following question, and I think it's worth pointing out the question itself is a little bit interesting, but also the way that Rav Moshe kind of addresses this question is also a little bit interesting. So Rav Moshe was asked this question in 1960. This is Yoredeya Chelik Bet, Siman Chasvav. He asked the following question, and what's interesting is we never get, this is what makes Rav Moshe's question interesting, we don't ever get the version that was written towards Rav Moshe, to Rav Moshe, right? Sometimes you can read tshuva, especially of Rishonim, and you actually get a copy of what the original tshuva looked like. You'll get a whole description of the case and maybe even like the original language. But the Rav Moshe doesn't do that. Rav Moshe kind of just jumps straight in and only gives you his answer. He kind of like tells you what the question is about, but we don't actually get a sense of what exactly the person asked, you know, verbatim. What did they actually say? So it's not entirely clear what this person asked Rav Moshe, but this is certainly the way that Rav Moshe understood the question. Bedavar ha-vitamin, when it comes to vitamins, shenasu mikaved shel behimot kshirot, imutar livloatam achar achilat chalav. So many vitamins have as part of the various enzymes or the casings that the, you know, that the protective, like, whatever, like, membranes that they have, you know, that cover the vitamins, they often are made of glycerin or something of the like, which are animal byproducts. So Rav Moshe is asked the following question. I think we've spoken in the past about whether it has to be kosher or not. I think that was, like, a month or two ago. This question is not about whether it's kosher. Assuming it is kosher, that's not the question here. Do you have to wait 6 hours, or whatever time you usually wait, between milk and meat if you have this vitamin, right? You have to wait. You have your vitamin, and you know that the vitamin has, you know, some, you know, let's say kosher, you know, you buy a kosher vitamin at the local, you know, Borough Park grocery pharmacy, and, you know, has a hechsher on it, has a chavkei, and you take it, you know, with your coffee in the morning. Or sorry, better yet, can you take it with your coffee and milk in the morning, right? Can you take it, after you've taken it, I tell you the first thing in the morning, you take it with a little bit of water, can I now have coffee afterwards, right? Do I have to be concerned that I'm kwashiorkor and I have to wait 6 hours?
Well, in the state that it's in, when they put it in a vitamin, it's probably not really lachilas kelev, so maybe not.
Is that what you're going to deal with it? Yeah, so that's a part of the question. But it's an interesting question. Like, do you have to, you know, be concerned about 6 hours? So this is Rav Moshe's question. So first off, Rav Moshe, the way he understands this question is a little bit, is interesting itself. We don't have a version, as I said, of the original question, but the way that the question, I guess, to Rav Moshe sounded was whether or not you're allowed to swallow these pills after having first drinking milk. That's the question, the way it sounded. In other words, the way it sounded to Moshe was, can I first drink my coffee with milk? And after drinking my coffee with milk, can I then take the pill?
That would have thought the question would be the other way around.
So that's exactly where Moshe's comment. He's going to say, Hine zivadai enu klum. Dachar chalav mutar lechol basar. Moshe says, like, I don't get the question. Like, obviously, after milk, you're allowed to eat meat. There's no prohibition of eating meat after milk.
No weight at all.
No weight at all. There is a discussion, he's not just mentioning this here, there is a discussion about needing to kind of wash your mouth out. Yeah, he doesn't address that. I guess he's kind of assuming it isn't relevant here, but you have to wash your mouth out. In theory, if you didn't use utensils, you have to actually wash your hands also. Nowadays, most people use utensils. Your hands are probably clean, but if your hands aren't clean, you'd have to wash your hands as well. But assuming your mouth and your hands are clean and there's no leftover residue milk, you know, in the immediate vicinity, then you'd be able to eat right away. So Rav Moshe is like, why would you be able to take the pill? There's no real problem. Then he says, V'ulai kabanat machmot rasa hu achar gvina kasha sheish lachmir shelo lechal basar. There is a halacha that the Rama quotes based on the Maharam, that when it comes to eating hard cheese, that after eating hard cheese, you have to wait 6 hours. Now, why did this come up? So there's a little bit of debate about the exact source, but the Maram pretty much says the following story. It's based on Marami Rutenberg, says that one time he was eating hard cheese. You know, he was, you know, I guess maybe he was in prison at the time, and they'd given him a little piece of Parmesan or something. He's chewing on his Parmesan. And he notices a few hours later that he still has some cheese left over between his teeth. And so because of that, he decided that when it comes to eating cheese, he's going to be mocking on himself, that you're going to have to wait 6 hours after eating cheese. The Rama says, based on that, that the minhag has become that after eating hard cheese, not soft cheeses, we wait 6 hours. Now, what are the hard cheeses or soft cheeses? Basically, any cheese which ferments for like more than 6 months is a hard cheese, which is, you know, any quality cheese. Like, if it's Parmesan, if it's like quality cheddar, it's, you know, anything like by the cheese guy nowadays you buy. Those are hard cheeses. If you're buying like cream cheese or cottage cheese or what's called in Hebrew like vina levana, like the, you know, slices of cheese or mozzarella, those are all soft cheeses. This wouldn't apply to it. But either way, there is a halacha about waiting 6 hours after that. And Rav Moshe says, maybe that's the question. Maybe the question's being asked. Maybe this individual had a, maybe he had some bread and, you know, some hard cheese. Maybe he had, you know, like a French sandwich with the, you know, quality Emmental bread, you know, cheese, which is hard cheese. Yeah.
How about, I buy these, like, Parmesan shakers or grated. Is that considered hard?
So it's a little bit debated about Parmesan. Parmesan, most people think it is hard.
Even grated.
Yeah, because grated, it's just the way, the question is not how it's created now. The question is when it was formed, was it hard, like did it ferment for, you know, over 6 months? So I think for the most part, Parmesan is assumed that it is hard. Or there's a little bit of debate about Parmesan. So it's kind of, Parmesan is like one cheese that I'd say most people don't eat as a fancy cheese, and yet they still have it.
And so, cheddar, old cheddar?
Depends on the cheddar. Oh. Depends on the cheddar. Some cheddars are more fancy than others.
Yeah,
usually fancy cheddars will say on them that it's been fermented more than for a few months.
Oh, the packet says?
If it's a quality cheddar, it'll say on it.
I bet you if you bought Miller's cheddar, it's not
high. Miller's cheddar does not, yeah. If you're buying, like, regular cheddar from, like, I'd say the average kosher supermarket, it's not hard cheese. except for really Parmesan. That's really the only thing you're going to typically buy a typical menu.
Munster isn't hard cheese.
Munster is not hard cheese. No, if you buy, like, fancy cheeses, those are going to be hard cheeses. If you buy Parmesan, that would be hard, but, like, otherwise, like, I mean, I can list you, like, I happen to like cheeses, so I can list you a bunch of hard cheeses, but they're fancy cheeses. They're not cheeses that the average person typically has. The average American certainly does not have.
Speaking of cheeses, Fairway has all kinds of fancy kosher cheeses now.
Some, yeah.
Right.
Some.
Right.
Much
some.
More than any place else I've seen. So
yeah, I have my complaint. They don't have they don't have the things I want. But yeah.
All right, but they've broadened.
Yes, yes, they have. Yeah. So some of those cheeses would be hard cheese, depending on the one. But so cheddar, for the most part, if a cheddar is going to be hard cheese, they'll usually stay on it. They've just been fermented for a certain amount of time. Because it's more expensive as a result, and it's more desirable. I actually think Trader Joe's sells a kosher cheddar cheese. Yeah, you can find, like, in their cheese section, a kosher one. And so that one, I think, is hard, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so the question Rav Moshe asked is, maybe this is the question the guy was asking. Maybe he has, you know, his Parmesan cheese sandwich, you know, in the morning, and he wants to take his pill, you know, after that. Maybe that's the question. So Rav Moshe says, if that's the question, aval zeu rach lechomra shemikar din mutar afilu achar gvina kasher ki ita beramah simon peitet simon bet. So Rav Moshe says, if the question is about that, well, the truth is, the Rama makes it clear that eating after hard cheese, eating meat after hard cheese, that's a chomra. It's a halacha, which I think it's like more accepted than like the average chomra, but it's still a chumra. So Rav Moshe actually doesn't clear whether what he thinks in this particular question, but instead Rav Moshe kind of transitions and says, instead what I want to point out is what he should have asked. What this guy really should have asked, like what the quality question would have been, can you first eat the vitamin and then afterwards eat milk? Right, which would be the problem of eating milk, eating dairy, after you become fleshing. So this is the question Rav Moshe is dealing with. You have to wait 6 hours. So Rav Moshe says the following. Upashut shigam bazeh mutar sheleka bazeh ta'amim shuskiru betaz ubashach. So Rav Moshe says there is no reason you have to wait 6 hours. And he quotes that the two reasons that are ascribed in the taz and the shach for why you wait 6 hours or 3 hours or 1 hour, depending on your minhag, after eating meat would not apply. What are those reasons? Why do you have to wait 6 hours? What's the reason for it? It
takes that long to get it out of your teeth.
So there are two reasons quoted. So the Rambam suggests that the reason you have to wait 6 hours is because on average it takes 6 hours for, like, there usually is some type of meat stuck in your teeth for 6 hours or so. So that's the Basar or Deni Ben Shinehem. The verse in Bamidbar talks about the meat being stuck between your teeth. So we're concerned that maybe there is meat stuck, you know, between your teeth for a few hours. That's reason number one. A different reason quoted by Rashi is it's not about the meat stuck between your teeth. Rather, it's about how long does it take for the taste to get digested, right? And if you have, you know, say you have like a quality steak, so like usually, you know, I usually can taste like in my mouth. Even though I don't have, like, even if I floss and I have no, you know, residue left in my mouth, usually you can still, like, you know, feel that you had fleshiks not so long ago. I usually can tell if you had, you know, very strong, you know, meat. So the same concern is here true as well. And so those are the two concerns when it comes to, in general, why you have to wait 6 hours.
That was all before we had good toothpaste and toothbrushes and toothpick things and, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, even though nowadays I would still say, like, I mean, first off, like, those reasons, like, you know,
no,
I say low plug.
But
even so, not everyone, I guess there are some people who are very intentional about flossing and making sure to brush their teeth. Not everyone is. I think most people are not. Even if people do it more often than not, they don't do it consistently every single meal. So it's, you know, I think there's good reason to wait. You know, I think the reasons still would apply. But Rav Moshe is pointing out that at least when it comes to vitamins, well, do vitamins, are they going to be stuck between your teeth?
Well,
I hope not. And vitamins, I really hope they also don't leave, like, residue or some type of, like, aftertaste in your mouth of meat. I mean, sometimes, like, if there's, like, a really bad-tasting vitamin, like, maybe it'll have, like, some aftertaste. But it's definitely not a meat aftertaste. It's, you know, it's just, like, a, you know, unpleasant taste. So Ramosh is saying, so both reasons that the Shach and the Tav quote are, therefore, no longer relevant. In which case, that would suggest that you, therefore, be capable of, you don't have to wait 6 hours. So then Moshe says, maybe there'd be another reason you'd say. Maybe you'd say the rule of lo plug. Right? Maybe, and this is oftentimes true in halacha, we say that, yes, it's true, technically this particular item does not fit within the typical concerns that we might have when it comes to eating meat, you know, or milk, so after this particular product. But we have in halacha often the rule of lo plug that we make these blanket principles. Because if we start, you know, differentiating between cases, people, like, you know, not everyone always realizes the differences, and, you know, if we start telling people, like, oh, you can have this type of product after eating meat because, like, you know, it's okay, then you might not realize that something else is different. So we usually just make blanket rules. So Ramosha says he might have suggested that the same thing's true here as well. Maybe by vitamins, you might say that there is a blanket rule that because it's contained or produced with, you know, meat byproducts, therefore you should be machmir. So Ramosha says, we're not going to say that. Why not? Even though some people actually do disagree with him, potentially. But here Ramosha says, we're not concerned about that.
I just want to ask, what's the precise meaning of lo plug?
We do not differentiate. Like, peleg means to, like, cut in half. Peleg means, like, cut in half or, like, split.
Yeah, I know.
So we don't split
like
hairs.
Flagmental.
Yeah, exactly. Dehalo yifalgu mitziut. So Ramosha says, we don't say it here because we don't make differentiations in terms of, like, these cases. Why not? Vitamins, though, are like something which is, you really don't eat vitamins. You don't chew on vitamins. You swallow them. I guess nowadays, I guess you do have some chewable ones. So
I have one chewable one, so where you can get the particular vitamin.
So I guess this is really interesting what Moshe would say about those. But certainly, there Moshe is talking about the cases where you're swallowing vitamins, and because you're swallowing vitamins, it's really such a very different way of eating. I mean, especially not the chewable ones. Like, vitamins are not really food the same way. Like, everyone who takes a pill, whatever it is, or a vitamin, knows they're taking a vitamin because most people, you know, have to get a glass of water or some other drink. And even if you can take a vitamin without drinking, you know, you're aware it's a very different type of eating. Like, it's not food. It's not the same method of eating as you typically would. So Ramosha is saying lo plug wouldn't apply here because it's so obviously discernible and distinguished, you know, and different than any other case. We're not going to be concerned here. Ve'afi mechad yishaneh miderech ha'olam v'yalos ha'vaytaminim. And even if someone will change from the typical method of the world, right? And let's say this individual decides they're going to bite on the vitamins. He's not talking about chewable ones. Let's say, you know, non-chewable ones, like he's taking, I mean, some vitamins have, like, some type of, like, sugar coating, so, like, they taste a little bit, you know, sweet or something. So maybe you decide to bite on them. So even if that's what you do, aimless, or kevan she'al vitaminim leka ha'iser. Nonetheless, he doesn't think it's a prohibition, even in that case, because, as a general rule, he doesn't think there really is a prohibition of vitamins being considered phlegic. V'gam kevan she'be vitamins lo ya minhag, v'shim she'lo ya ze ad eza shanim, not only that, but you might have said, oh, you know what, maybe there's an old minhag, like this is the way that my Alter Zaidi always did it, you know, we always waited, you know, after eating vitamins. Well, Rav Moshe says, well, your Alter Zaidi didn't have vitamins. They didn't have vitamins back in the day. Yeah. So there is no minhag, there's no, like, precedent that we have to hold by.
It's also, most people don't even know this, there's for sure no precedent.
Yeah, people aren't even aware. He's not even mentioning it. So most people aren't even aware that there is, like, meat byproducts inside their vitamins. I mean, depends on who you're asking, but I think, like, even most vegans take, let's say, not vitamins, but let's say certainly, like, pills.
Right.
Most vegans will take a pill even without paying attention to the fact that the pill might have glycerin, which is a byproduct of animals, right?
Right.
Even people who care about, you know, being specific, not eating any animal products. So, you know, this is like, I think it's very common. We don't often think about exactly what, when it comes to like medication, where, you know, what exactly, how is it made? וגם בטעם של מצינו שאף שיש בו טעם האוסרו, כמו בניפה של בגדר של בשר, שלא הודחה שיש קצת ממשות של איסר שאסור לאכול גבינה, ומכל מקום שרי לאכול גבינה חרב. Not only that, but Moshe points out, when it comes to the rules of eating milk and meat, so we tend to be more machmir when it comes to eating milk and meat at the same time. But when it comes to waiting, so even though, yes, it's true, that for the most part, after eating meat, you're going to have to wait, you know, 6 hours, whatever it is, before you're able to eat milk. There are a number of scenarios where we're mako, and even though we would prohibit you from eating at the same time, we would say you're not fleishik and that you're allowed to eat milk afterwards. What's an example of it? So Moshe says, for example, if you eat... if you cook your, let's say your parv food, let's say you cook your vegetables in fleishik cookware, and let's say the case is even a case where the cookware was not really cleaned so well, right? And it's not filthy, it's not like there's like tons of meat left over, but it's not, you know, fully cleaned, maybe there's like some crumbs here or there, maybe there's like a little bit of meat left over. So the halacha is that the food that, you know, the, let's say the vegetables, whatever, the parv item that you made, can you eat that with milk?
No.
No, you're not allowed to eat it with milk. It is considered to be fleishik, at least, certainly for Ashkenazim, you're not allowed to eat it with milk. However, when it comes to waiting 6 hours, the answer is, even something that had, that the dish had, when it was, you know, created, was, had, like, leftover, you know, meat in it, even if it was just like a little bit, that dish now, after eating it, you now are, in fact, allowed to eat milk. Not at the same time, but in terms of waiting 6 hours, you don't have to wait 6 hours. And not only that, but emotion, there are a few other cases like that where that comes up. So, for instance, v'chein l'man d'amar sh'asr na'ponat a'i v'bishol l'shima sh'adavar charif sh'likulim am asr nami shari l'chol acharav g'vina. K'ifur sh'bar v'kiveyer sham kaven sh'ein bon tam gadol. Likely another case which often comes up is there's a rule when it comes to davar charif, anything which is like really sharp. So the rule is that anytime you have something sharp in the dish, so we treat it almost like fleishik. Like for instance, let's say for instance I am making an omelet in my fleishik pan, and my fleishik pan is for the most part clean, hopefully, and I'd say even better than that, I haven't even used my fleishik pan in, you know, in a few days, right? It's been clean, haven't been used in a few days. But I decided to make an omelet, and what do I put in the omelet? I put onions. So the onions are sharp, so now I have to treat this fleishik, I have to treat the omelet, even though there's no meat in it, I have to treat it as fleishik. I cannot eat this omelet with milk. That's like halacha, very clearly. However, even though that's true, and it's very accepted upon, according to all poskim, at the same time, after eating this omelet, can I eat afterwards milk? Can I have, you know, cheesecake or whatever it is afterwards? The answer is yes. Because even in this case, it's only considered to be what, you know, modern kosher industry calls it, like, fleishik equipment.
Right.
Right? It's not considered to actually be fleishik, it's just fleishik equipment, so you can't eat at the same time, but you are not considered to be, but you are not fleishik, such that you're allowed to eat 6 hours later, you know, so you don't have to, such that you don't have to wait 6 hours before eating it.
I assume that's because the bleos from the pan are so minute that it's almost like butter in terms of having to wait 6 hours, but since it actually was made, and it does have some bleos, you wouldn't...
Yeah, that's actually exactly what it is, because, like, because it's such small taste, we're talking about such minimum amount of taste, we're not concerned about it, you know, being left over in your mouth for a number of hours. Like that, we're not concerned about.
Yeah, I have two questions. So, first of all, like you just said, Yisrael of Fisher Brothers, who moved, also told me that everything they said that was made on meat equipment, he said, just don't eat it together with dairy. But I had a question about the residue of taste when you were talking about steak. I once saw on television, and I know somebody does this, people who try to lose weight chew the meat and spit it out. It looks disgusting. But would that be considered that the taste stays with you and it takes so long to digest?
So I'll get back to that. That's interesting. It's a very interesting question. Let's talk about that. Yeah. It's been trading. I'll talk about that. It's an interesting question. Okay, so let's just finish the tshuva. So Rav Moshe then says, "Im kein kol shekein she'ein latzon lachol v'nachar v'itamin she'ein bo k'tat kaved." So Rav Moshe says, therefore, if in all of these cases, right, where you're actually eating something that which we prohibit you from eating at the same time as eating milk, and yet in terms of the question of waiting 6 hours, we would say you don't have to wait 6 hours. So then kal v'chomer, in a case where here you're eating vitamins or pills, and you know, it has some iron byproduct, but you're not really eating it, it's not really fleshic in the same way, then kal v'chomer, you don't have to wait 6 hours afterwards. Even if you say that there is a little bit of taste, which is sometimes true, but rarely true, that the glycerin gives a little bit of a taste, so even if there is a little bit of taste, Rav Moshe thinks that still wouldn't matter. And not only that, Rav Moshe adds, it's not entirely clear that A, it gives any taste, and even if it does give taste, the way that they make like glycerin, it's such like a production, it's not clear it still has the status of meat at that point. Like, it has to, like, really change the whole format. In some way, it doesn't feel like meat. It really tastes like, you know, not...
It's like glycerin.
It's glycerin. It tastes like, not plastic product, but it tastes like something that doesn't have a meat, you know, taste to it. So, it's not even clear, for instance, Rav Moshe doesn't say explicitly, but it's not even clear that, like, you couldn't take a vitamin with milk. Rav Moshe doesn't say anything about it. I think most posting would tell you to be machmir, ideally, and not take it at the same time as milk, just be concerned potentially, maybe it's milk, it's, you know, don't drink it with your coffee, don't, you know, don't take coffee, you know, with milk while, you know, taking your pills, but that's not the same thing as waiting 6 hours. Kal v'chomer, 6 hours, you don't really have to wait. V'chein l'chol d'vinachar v'itamin shel kaved, en makom l'choshtal, v'kosh again sh'mutar liv lo'o samachar v'vinach kasheh, v'gam b'lo kinuach v'adach apiv, and therefore when it comes to, after eating these pills, can you eat milk-like material? The answer is yes, you can. And not only that, but then kal v'chomer, if I first eat hard cheese, can I now take my pill? Then yes, of course, since it's only chomer to begin with. And, you know, we don't think this would be a problem here. And Rav Moshe says you'd be able to do it even without washing your mouth out because, you know, pills don't really leave any residue in your mouth. You're not going to have an issue. You can even, you know, do it all without first washing your mouth. Yeah.
Based on what Moshe says, in terms of it's not even like meat anymore, it's like totally something different, you could probably take that so far as to say you don't even need to have kosher glycerin, so therefore you might not even need to have kosher vitamins. I mean, he's not saying that, but you could extend it to that. Because if it's so not like meat or food at all, then so that you don't need milk after it, then why does it have to be kosher in the first place? Because it's not food anymore.
Yeah, we actually talked about that, I think, before Pesach. We had a bunch of classes. I'm not sure if I remember Moshe Pashkin on it. I'm actually blinking out which way he went.
I seem to remember that we're supposed to eat kosher vitamin stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what Moshe Pashkin on. I'm actually blinking out what he Pashkin. But certainly there is a big question. Like, you're right, vitamins in general, we have to be concerned about them being kosher or not because they're not food. Vitamins are a little bit more complicated. I think this is what we talked about at the time. Vitamins are a little bit more complicated because vitamins are health supplements. Right, they're supplements in that they're not always needed, but they're supplementary and they're considered food a little bit more. So there's a little bit more of a question about are they more food than medicine. But certainly if you're taking, you know, let's say back in the day, you were a diabetic and you were taking, diabetic medicine. So back nowadays it's all synthetic, but back in the day they used to actually diabetic the medicine was actually a byproduct of often pig, and yet I think most postings would say, like, there's no problem with that because, like, it's not food. It's also medically necessary.
Right.
But beyond the fact it's medically necessary, it's also not really food. You're not eating it as food. So posting would say it's not a problem. Vitamins are a little more complicated, but I think you're right that there is certainly, it's not entirely clear that vitamins would be a problem at all, of even kosher, let alone milk and meat issues. So that's all regard to that. Okay. Your question, go back to your question. So your question was about people who don't eat, if you don't swallow if you don't swallow. So first off, in that regard, the tour quotes the following case. This is the case that you're talking about. Let's say you are a parent and you have a young infant and you want to feed your infant chicken or meat. So what do you do? So nowadays, you probably put the meat in like a little bit of a grinder. It grinds the meat up, and then you can give it to your infant. And, you know, it goes on date. It's great. The infant can eat the meat. But back in the day, you didn't really have a grinder. So what did you do? So what you did was you put the meat in your mouth. You chewed on it a bit so it got softer, and then you, you know, spit it out and gave it to your kid to eat. That's what people did. You'll still kind of do it a little bit.
There's somebody who's relatively famous actress who did that with that.
Yeah, I mean, so that you can debate like the health about it, but people, that's certainly what people did for a long time. So the tour says, after that, let's say the kid, whatever, we forget the kid waiting 6 hours, that's not what we're talking about, the adult. The adult doesn't want to be milkplasic, but the kid, whatever it is, that's what they're eating. Is the adult now plasic? So the tour actually says, in that scenario, the person is considered to be fleshed. You actually seemingly do have to wait 6 hours, at least according to the Rambam, because the Rambam's concern, right, this was the two, there's two explanations for waiting 6 hours. You have to wait 6 hours because of the food stuck between your teeth or because of the taste, like, in your mouth or your digestive system. So there's nothing in your digestive system, but there might be meat stuck between your teeth.
Somebody have a taste in your mouth.
Yeah, but probably not.
Because you chew it up as much as they can.
Well, it's more about not your mouth. It's really about like your throat and your digestive, you know, tract. So you're probably not worried about that, but you are potentially worried about between your teeth. So actually, the source says this would be a naskamina. This would be actually be a different case. And it seems like the Shulchan Aruch says it would be machmir. In which case, in this context, it would suggest that after having eaten, after having bitten on these foods, even if you hadn't swallowed it, you actually have to wait 6 hours. And actually, it's funny you say this question because somebody actually just asked me a question like this just this week about what if this individual said she accidentally ate or started chewing on some, I think, chicken or something, and like very quickly spit it out, realized like, oh my gosh, I didn't want to eat this because I want to eat milkshakes. She washed her mouth out with, you know, brushed her teeth and detergent and you know, mouthwash and all that, and asked me, like, okay, do I have to wait now 6 hours, or can I eat milchiks? So at least according to the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch, you actually would have to wait 6 hours. However, there is a but. The however is that when it comes to the amount of time you have to wait, so the Shulchan Aruch quotes the opinion of the Rambam, you have to wait 6 hours. The Rama says, first, quote, seems to agree with the Shulchan Aruch, but quote, there are other opinions. And he quotes in particular the opinion of Tosfot. And Tosfot believes that what you have to do, you have to change meals, meaning that you have to, you know, change your tablecloth. You cannot eat milk and meat in the exact same meal, but as long as you finish your meat meal, you then bench, you change the tablecloth, you now seemingly could eat milk. That's the way that Tosfot actually seems to paskin. And the Rama says, on that basis, the Rama says, if you want to be mako and wait an hour, that's how they guess an hour, then it'd be okay to wait an hour. Now, the Rama then adds, the minhag, though, in our community, very strongly, is not to rely on his opinion, and rather to wait 6 hours. So, unless you're Dutch, people do not rely on 1 hour. That's not very typical.
Where does the 3 hours come from? Some people wait 3 hours.
Yeah, 3 hours is a whole discussion where 3 hours comes from. It's a big debate about where it comes from. Is it really rationale for 3 hours? But yeah, it's a whole.
It has to do with subsequent meals because your general meal thing is
lunch
3 hours after breakfast and maybe dinner 3 hours.
Yeah, the theory usually is that like from the, where they used to live, they used to have meals more often.
Right.
That's just the theory. Yeah.
Back to that question, it's so interesting that you had a related question. So in other words, I think the people do this chewing in order to get the liquid out of the meat and have the taste. So the question is,
interesting. Okay, so let me get that in a second. Okay, so let's get that in a second. Let me finish this thing.
Yeah,
So even in this case, so for the case of the chewing for the nutritional value, just in this case, here, it's actually... while it is true that Shana seems very clearly like we pass in the Chumrah according to both positions, that we're concerned about both food being stuck in your teeth and about the digestive tract, that you have to wait, you know, after having eaten meat. Rabbi Akiva Eiger points out that in his opinion, you can rely on the more makil positions in terms of how long you have to wait in such a case.
Where you're just chewing it and didn't swallow.
Meaning in the case where you didn't swallow, then it sounds like he says, like, yes, you have to wait before you can eat milk. But you don't have to wait necessarily 6 hours. You can rely on the more makel position, which says, you know, wait 1 hour. Not everyone agrees with this, but this is a pretty a common shock, and actually many people do posken this way in such a situation. So at least for in the case of a parent and a kid, I would say certainly, you know, don't have milk right away. Wait like an hour. And then you can have milk. And that's what, you know, I was told this person in this case, you know, where she, you know, accidentally started chewing on something. I said, you know, wait an hour, but then afterwards you want to have your, you know, dairy meal, have your dairy meal. I guess the question for the, I don't know exactly what they're doing. If they're actually, you know, swallowing, they're just like.
No, they're not swallowing. They're chewing. And again, I guess they get the liquid from the meat and they spit it out.
They swallow the liquid.
But they're doing something with the liquid.
So the question
they're getting nutrients, right?
Whether the liquid counts for 6 hours of digestion.
So it probably would, yeah. They're actually like, they're probably swallowing something. They're not tasting, they're not swallowing the substance.
Coming from nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're probably just trying to save, they're probably trying to just like, you know.
Why don't they swallow?
They're trying to lose weight.
Oh,
so they don't let the food go.
Right. Okay, but,
but they taste it.
So they're still eating though something. It's still, I think they still
could.
Yeah.
I've tried a lot of different ways to lose weight, but
so I think at that point it'd be considered to be eating. So I think most people probably say you'd have to wait, you know, your 6 hours after that.
Wow.
But it's an interesting case.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Rav Moshe's on these two questions, on these two cases. I guess next week we'll talk about some more stuff. Next week we'll talk about dishwashers.
Yeah.
Rav Moshe has an interesting position on dishwashers, using a dishwasher. And see you all next week.
Yeah.